years ago today, a place of celebration for the LGBTQ community in Orlando became a scene of carnage. 49 people were killed when a gunman opened fire at Pulse nightclub in the early hours of a Sunday morning. Evidence in the trial of the shooter's wife revealed that the intent wasn't to target LGBTQ people, but the tragedy was still a call to action for many across the country.
Glory, glory, hallelujah! Glory, glory, hallelujah! Glory, glory, hallelujah! Yes, we are marching on.
Kevin Herzog and David Moran are both part of the group Gays Against Guns, which was formed after the attack, and they're now live from Orlando. David and Kevin, welcome to The Takeaway.
Thank you.
Thanks. Good to be here.
David, you lived in Orlando for decades, and I want to start by acknowledging the Pulse shooting that happened 3 years ago. What do you remember from that night?
Yeah, you know, it's still very vivid. You know, I was in grad school at the time and had been just finishing a serving shift. My friend Joanne had just come back for the summer the day before, and we both were working at the restaurant, and I was having car trouble. We had actually discussed going out either to Parliament House, which is one of the gay clubs, or Pulse. But because of my battery having an issue, we just kind of gave up and went home. I was like kind of woken up to my phone vibrating, and someone attacked me on Facebook saying that we were fine. We were all of us who had worked at the restaurant the night before were fine, even though we could have gone out. And then I got a text from my friend Alex. We both went to Virginia Tech together, and when the Virginia Tech shooting happened there, we were living in Orlando. We had graduated in 2005, and he was the first person to text me when news was breaking about the Pulse shooting happened. So I lied in my bed and started texting my family and my friends. I didn't know who was out, who was safe, you know, and it was bringing back a lot of memories from exactly how things unfolded with the Virginia Tech shooting almost 10 years before. There was just this utter silence in my room, which I knew was completely contrasting just the horror and chaos that was going on at Pulse, a place that I basically spent my 20s kind of coming of age as an openly gay man.
David, you lost friends in the shooting, right?
I always get nervous speaking about how Pulse has impacted me, because Pulse has impacted everyone and so many people around the world in different ways. You know, I immediately think of the families, Chosen and Blood, who lost loved ones, the survivors who were at the club that night that escaped. I'm a gun violence survivor myself from an armed robbery, and survivorship is so complicated. Yeah, I had seen my friend Brandon, who has since become an incredible advocate for LGBTQ plus equality and gun control, and had posted on Facebook that he and his boyfriend had gotten out of the club. And so I messaged him, and he said, you know, Juan has been shot, and we don't know where Drew is. You know, my heart sank, and I just was like, oh, God. Many people were going through that same kind of realization of who's missing, who can I not get in touch with. And many people did not know until the next day what the true situation was. And it all felt like a dream, a terrible dream.
Kevin, I want to bring you in here. What was the moment like for you? What did you do in the wake of the Pulse shooting?
I did what everybody does. I went on social media. That's where I found out about it, and that's where I sort of decided to do something about it. I just felt like it was this point at which it was no longer responsible to have the standard response, you know, which is like you change your Facebook profile picture and you say, oh, this is awful. And then, you know, everybody goes and has an egg salad sandwich somewhere. And there was a spontaneous vigil the next day in front of Stonewall. And I went to that. And then there was this very orchestrated vigil on Monday, the Monday evening, which was 2 days afterwards. And there were politicians and there were celebrities. And it was one of the most frustrating experiences of my life, because you're there with these feelings, and the feelings are getting appropriated, and they're kind of like they're getting capitalized by these public figures. And I just felt to myself, you know, no, like this is not us. Like I want us to do something. And I wasn't sure who us was. And I wasn't sure how to make that happen. But I just thought, if not me, then who? You know, it was one of those times when I felt like, you know, you can't stand around looking for the other person to make the first move. So that's what I did.
And you said you were at Stonewall. And so then what ended up happening? Was that the beginning of Gays Against Guns?
The beginning of it was basically a Facebook event page. You know, it was just a notification that we were going to have a meeting and discuss what our reply or what our response was going to be to the shooting. And the original location for the meeting was my apartment. I can hold maybe 30, maybe 40 people max in my apartment. And so the response started coming in, and there were hundreds of people that were interested in attending the meeting. And so I very quickly realized that we needed a larger space. Mm.
David, how has the LGBTQ community in Orlando changed since the shooting 3 years ago?
Oh, goodness. Well, I would say that there have always been many LGBTQ plus communities or experiences, you know, the intersection of gender and race and ethnicity and socioeconomic status. So one of the things that I definitely noticed was, in addition to all of us trying to navigate what it means to be part of a survivor community, to navigate how to push through this trauma, and many people who had already had very traumatic things in their life having that re-triggered. So the mental health, the self-care, and the trauma piece, I think, was a big thing. But also figuring out, what does it look like to empower people to self-determine, to self-identify, to self-lead, and problem solve what their needs are. And there was definitely a cultural gap, an intercultural gap when Pulse happened, where you were seeing many folks in leadership in the LGBTQ plus community that were primarily cis, gender, gay, and lesbian, white men, more middle class, upper class. And there was a disconnect from not necessarily intentionally, but from the reality of, you know, it was Latin night, that club. So there was much more of an intersection with brown and black folks and folks that were working at the theme parks and the hospitality industry and folks that had recently immigrated here that, you know, were not connected to the leadership. And so there was definitely a learning curve to figure out, how do we have language inclusion to support families that primarily speak Spanish or Haitian Creole? But it's been incredible to see organizations centering the intersection of the LGBTQ plus and Latinx experience in Central Florida. You know, I never imagined that there was anything that could be done around gun violence to have prevented either one of those issues. It was almost like it was inevitable. But thanks to leaders like Kevin coming down, you know, creating this space, I all of a sudden saw, wait a minute, there are things that can be done to really address that, to address different needs, because Pulse means so many different things to different people. For some folks, Pulse is political. For other folks, Pulse is personal. And for many, it's both. But, you know, people are saying, you know, I lost my mother, or my father, or my spouse, or my partner. I lost the safe space. People around the world feeling impacted, whether they're Puerto Rican or LGBTQ plus or black, or not out of the closet as gay or trans yet. That impact was felt worldwide. So it was bizarre to see rainbows everywhere. It was bizarre to see the Pulse symbol everywhere. It almost in some ways felt violating, because something that had been so personal and kind of a sacred space was now becoming everyone's. And that continues to be a journey in terms of, like, how do we really facilitate a shared custody of the Pulse legacy, of the Pulse site, that is inclusive but doesn't lose sight that it was a queer space. And it should be a queer-centered space that is intersectional and inclusive but meaningful to as many people as possible.
Tell us, Kevin, a little bit about what Gays Against Guns will be doing on this third memorial, if you will, of the Pulse nightclub shooting 3 years ago.
Every year on the marker of the shooting, we respond in some way. The first year we closed down Sheridan Square and we had an enormous half vigil, half celebration, which we felt was appropriate because people were still grieving and people were still focused on the idea that life goes on. And so we had performers, we had speeches, and it was attended by thousands and thousands of people, and that felt appropriate. And last year, we had a more muted response, and then this year we realized we had an opportunity to come down to the space itself, which we had not done as an organization, even though what happened here was the catalyst for the formation of our group. And so when we started talking about coming down, we sort of made a very loose game plan because we understood that we didn't want to come charging in on white horses and tell everyone we're here to save you and here's how we're going to do it. You know, we wanted to first come down, get the lay of the land, listen to what people had to say, talk to the people that are here all the time, and then figure out a way to insert ourselves into the conversation that would be supportive of them, and we didn't want to be drawing attention to ourselves in any way. We were here individually for ourselves. We are here as a group, but primarily to support what's happening. So the plan that we came up with was something that's inspired by a queer artist named Felix Gonzalez Torres, who was the visual artist who lived and worked in New York, and he died of AIDS, and a lot of his work addressed AIDS. And one of the ways that he worked was he would make printouts of a particular image, and he would leave a stack of them in a gallery or in a museum. The people that came to see the artwork were encouraged to take one of the prints. We felt like that kind of a exchange between people that were attending and us was appropriate.
And I would just add, I think Gays Against Guns, for me, is an incredible tool to not feel powerless, to not feel hopeless. And I'm really grateful to Kevin and the folks from New York for your leadership with that.
David Moran is an organizer with Gays Against Guns in Orlando, and Kevin Herzog is an organizer with Gays Against Guns in New York City. Thanks to you both.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, The New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.